gentlemen, rock stars and candy lovers. My name is Jared, and with me is my amped up friend, Ian.
That's me.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Rock Hard 1977, designed by Jackie Fox, artwork created by Jennifer Geiner, and published by DeVere.
Rock Hard 1977 is a 2-to-5 player game where players are musicians, and they're looking to make it big and grow their musical career. And they have to become the biggest rock star of them all. You will write songs, develop your chops, and create a reputation for yourself. The players with the most fame, after the end of 9 months, wins and is the next greatest rock star. Let's review Rock Hard 1977.
Wow, there's a lot going on there.
I mean, that's what every rock star hardly has a voice, and it's covered in smoke.
Oh.
And
not a critique. I'm just saying there's a lot going on there.
Well, Jared, as always, we got a question, and that question is, what was the first rock band you were ever introduced to, and when, and by whom?
To clarify, are we talking about just anywhere, like the first time I heard a rock band play in person, or on
the radio?
Or what are we talking about?
No, like somebody said, hey, like you should listen to this band, and I don't know however old you were, but you were... You know, you're only so old, and here you go. That's they show you something, and you're like, oh, my God, that was amazing.
All right. So I think, honestly, the answer to this question is that I don't know. So the story behind that is that my dad was the music guy in our family growing up, and he was much more interested in, like, 50s music and stuff like that. And so we didn't do a lot of rock growing up. And the kids in the neighborhood were into, like, it was all like girls that were into Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and stuff like that. So we didn't do rock there either. But I do remember being invited to Rocket Town when I was like, I don't know, an early teenager, as you do in Nashville back in the day. To this day, I could not tell you who we went to go listen to. But that I know that's probably where my first real introduction was.
There you go.
So I feel like that's a failed answer. I feel like I failed you here.
You did.
But I like just racking my brain. I'm like, I truly don't have any idea.
Yep. No, you did fail me, but it's okay. So the first rock band I was introduced to was from my dad in Journey. He was kind of a big Journey fan, but so anyway, he was like, you know, you pull out the CDs and we start going over it, and my mind was blown. I was like, oh my gosh, the amount of different things happening to that classic rock, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, my first ever concert was also Winter Jam. And I do know who I saw. I saw Skillet, and that was...
Oh, that's dope.
They had the Fire show. Yeah, my first ever rock show that I'd been to. It's just pure flames and fire, and I'm like, okay, I've been missing something in my life, and now it's here.
Skillet's pretty great. Skillet was one of those first bands. It wasn't the first rock band that I listened to, but it was the first one where I was like, okay, I can enjoy this.
Yeah,
because it just wasn't what I was used to growing up, so it was very unique. But the whole rock genre was.
Yeah.
So I have a follow up question for you, which I don't have to answer because I'm not musically inclined. But I know that you like to play the drums.
Yeah.
Was there a point in Ian's life where he was like, I'm going to join a band and we're going to make it big someday?
Yes. 100%. I tried to start multiple bands.
Okay.
But it's really hard to start a band when you're the drummer because you can't sing as I can't sing. So
It's just a drum, so.
See, maybe I have a misconception, because I've always, like, from the outside, as someone who knows nothing, I've always, like, viewed the drummer the same way I view, like, a goalie in hockey growing up. Like, there's such a shortage of them that are good that I would think people would be looking for you. Like,
maybe. Yeah, I mean, maybe I stopped trying to be a part of a band at one point, but...
You missed it, man.
Yeah,
you should
I guess
held out
so.
A little
but,
bit longer.
You know, you never know. Maybe my dreams will come true as an adult. So
that's
who knows?
True. You're still a wee little lad, so there's still a chance for you.
Right. Who knows what might happen?
Very good.
Yep.
All right.
Well, let's just talk about being a rock star.
All right. I'll talk to us about how to play really quick, give a brief overview, and then we will give some of our thoughts. So, in Rock Hard 1977, it is a worker placement game with a little bit of a push your luck element to it, where you are going around the board in three different phases, like Ian said, over the course of 9 months to gather the most points. In this game, points are referred to as fame. Each player gets their own character with an ability, a starting job, and personal goals. There's also a central board that holds the calendar, which tracks your 9 months, or 9 rounds, excuse me. The event cards, which each round gets a new event that affects the game state for that round in some various way. There are various locations your character can visit during the three phases of each game, which are day, night, and after hours. The day phase, you'll mostly have the opportunity to hire crew, get that record deal in place, perform interviews, and there are some other options as well. The night phase is more about spending your time performing at various gigs. That's really important to do that the right way, because there's lots of opportunity there, Ian, and you don't want to blow the opportunity when you're trying to make it big.
You can't blow your chance.
That's
right.
You
got to take advantage.
And then, of course, we don't go to bed after we play. We have to go unwind and, you know, make sure that we're living it up big. So there's the after hours phase, where you can go to a variety of different hangout spots, be able to partake in various story moments. There's also the opportunity to work on your demo tape, or there's also some universal actions that all three of these phases anyone can do. Maybe you need to go work your job. Some jobs do require that you work during a specific time. Maybe you have a day job, or maybe you have to go work after hours. I mean, who knows? Maybe you've blown off that job, and so you need to get some quick cash, so you might go give blood or sell some candy really quick.
There you go.
Or you're really feeling the tunes and need to write a new song. So again, all of those actions are available to you each phase of each round. Now, normally, you can take one action on a given phase. So during the day phase, I'll do one thing. Night phase, I'll play one gig. After hours, I'm either going to go get that demo tape or I'm going to go hang out at one spot. But there's something in the game called candy. Now, it looks like candy. It's titled candy. But I believe the implication, Ian, is that it's not really candy, based on some of the other things that I noticed in the implications on the cards.
It's up for interpretation.
It is. So just wanted you to be aware that that element is in the game. But what candy does, if you consume it, you have the opportunity to potentially get more actions. However, each time you consume candy, your craving does go up. And if your craving's too high, you could get a sugar rush, in which case you will have to recover and miss out on some actions later on, and it could potentially cause some devastating fame loss. And nobody likes to lose fame, Ian. It's not which one.
No.
Once players have gone through the 9 rounds, or if someone reaches 50 points or more before that, the game will end. At that point, any private goals that have not been revealed yet are now tallied, as well as any of your chops, reputation, and song counts that have been dialed all the way up to 11 will also get you additional points. And if you have money left over, that can score you some points as well. So that's a brief overview of the game. Whoever has the most fame at the end of the game wins. Let's head back over to the table and discuss.
This game was designed by Jackie Fox, who is not a game designer. Well, she's a game designer now, but hadn't previously done any work in this industry. But she played with a band called The Runaways.
Heyo.
And she wanted to design a game and about her passion which is the rock industry and what she her career was. She developed this game and worked with Devere to come with this game that really dives into multiple aspects of becoming a musician. She wanted to be as realistic as possible in a game that brought in all these different aspects of being a musician and trying to make it big. And I think she did a really good job of having easy concepts, and it's very easy to kind of pick what you want to do because it's worker placements and there's only so many spots to go to. So you're going to have to just pick one and roll with it. And that was, again, another goal for her, is make it kind of entry level family style game that works well with people of all different gaming types, but it's the theme that does hit well. And anyway, just to briefly discuss that, I think it was a very well done to bring in that aspects, and you could see that there's very well thought out on how each part of the board works and how the mechanics work with the game and the theme itself. So overall, well done by her and their team.
Jackie Fox has lived a life, maybe two or three. being with the Runaways wasn't enough. You know, she has done record promotions. She's a modeling agent. She's a promoter, and is also an entertainment attorney because, you know, why not?
Might
and
as
now
well.
As a board game designer.
Yep.
So, I mean, kudos to all of her success because it is very impressive. But I would agree with you. One of the things that you can see, even just learning the rules of the game, it is so easily accessible, and it's going to touch on so many different elements of this journey of becoming a rock star, both good and bad. And I feel like it touches it just enough to where you feel it, but it doesn't deep dive into any of it so much that you can get lost in the weeds.
Yeah.
Regardless of how I score this at the end, I think that is a rousing success from that perspective, because you want a game like this that will both be something of a draw for more hobby gamers, but also be easily accessible for new players to come into. I definitely feel like it fits in that medium light range. Mm-hmm. Where you have choices, those choices do interconnect throughout the game, and you can really be very meticulous and methodical about how you pursue your journey, or you can kind of go all over the place, and you're going to have a really interesting story at the end, regardless of how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the ability to kind of create your own journey, and you have your own job, and you know, the way you start your kind of career, so to speak, and how you promote yourself. Like, again, it's worker placement, so you kind of have these multiple paths to like gain points and the order in which you do them. That allows for this kind of just fun kind of back and forth, lighter. It is definitely a lighter worker placement that, you know, there's just, I've played others where there's a lot more thinking involved. Like, okay, the order in which I want to do things, that does apply here, but on many parts of the board, there's kind of multiple ways to get this similar thing. So that's the way I kind of look at it, is a little bit lighter in that regard, but it's a fun, you feel that kind of theme come through when you go to Studio B and you start getting, you know, you get more reputation and like stuff like that. It's very thematic in the way it develops as you play. Like, you're feeling your journey. I felt my journey happening as I'm playing, which is really cool.
Sure. No, I would agree. And I think, I mean, this works really well as a worker placement, because as you kind of get your engine going, the back half, I think, feels a little bit easier mm-hmm. than the first half does. I remember that turn one when we play, I'm just like, well, I have to go to work. But I don't want to go to work. Like, I have so many other things that I need to do.
Yeah.
And I've got to go work this stupid job to make a few bucks.
Right.
And, you know, there comes a point where you sign that first record deal and I'm like, oh, well, see you later, job. I don't need you anymore. I totally blow that off. And so I loved that feeling of that transition and feeling like, okay, now that I've got the record deal, I've made it.
Yeah.
And now I can just focus on my craft. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I think it's a good balance between, again, the theme and mechanics that really it shows itself.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? Because I feel like we've hit on a few games lately where we've made the comment it's dripping in theme.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would describe this one that way. I would say the theme is there and I see it in each interaction, but it doesn't overtake the game. Mm-hmm. Like at one point I could say, okay, I'm collecting X, Y, and Z. X, Y, and Z could be anything. It just happens to be this in this game, which I think is fine. I don't think that's a critique. I think that's the game is not like so focused on the theme itself that it's forgotten to become a game. I would also applaud that in that there is this cool journey and theme, and the hangout cards where you can go to different hangouts, kind of get different story moments depending on the type of hangout that you choose was really cool because it added more life to this character that I'm building.
We've definitely come across games that have strong theme and the theme drives the game. And then we've come across games that the mechanics was everything and they put a theme onto it and it works well as, you know, and can work well. Both can work well. I agree with you with this game. I think that there was an idea as far as the theme and they found a mechanic that works well with that theme and they kind of meshed them both together really in a strong way. And that doesn't take away kind of one from the other. You know, like you're saying, it's very balanced. I think as you're playing, you feel that worker placement. But as you're playing, in my mind, like you're feeling that kind of slow growth as a musician as well. So, but it's worker placement. So you're going to notice that more than maybe some other games mechanics because you're like, okay, I'm placing a worker and I'm going to go do something. So it's a good balance. That's what I'm getting at is just you're not going to feel kind of a strong, you know, pull necessarily from like it's not constant like you're saying constant just theme hitting you in the face.
Sure.
It's just it's on the board. You're seeing it on the board, and that's the biggest thing. There's a little flavor text injected here and there, and that's really cool. I like some of that. I think that's good. But again, it's not pushing it too hard that theme because the theme is on the box front. You picked up the box. You bought the game. You're playing the game. More than likely because the theme seems interesting to you. It gets you in there, and then once you're in, you're kind of feeling it as you play, in my opinion.
And I'll just say really quickly, in the game, I really enjoy the artwork. I feel like it captures it really well.
The art is good, yeah.
So props off to Jennifer Geiner. According to Board Game Geek, I think this is her first game. I'm double-checking myself here. I guess technically it's her second game. There is another smaller game that she's done. Well, it's also this year, so whatever.
Gotcha.
It's near. She's just getting into the board game world as far as artwork. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I feel like for what this game is wanting to be and the way that the artwork is there and is really cool, but it doesn't get in the way, I really enjoy that as well. So props to that.
Good functional art. Yeah.
Even though I will have one critique about the art later on. But we'll just throw that little foreshadowing out there.
I know what you're talking about, but yeah.
You do. I think something else that I really like is that... So, I couldn't stop talking about this when we were playing this game. Apiary has really changed the way that I look at worker placements in general. Because it lets me bump you off and I can go there like nothing's locked down. So...
Like any Obviously, other worker placement game.
I know. So, well, it's interesting playing this game after playing Apiary because you can't do that. Like, there's a lot of spots where you either get it or somebody else gets it first.
Yep.
And there were a couple aspects in this game that I really liked in the way they determine turn order is based on the value of the action that you take in the after hours.
Yeah.
So you can take the higher value and get something really cool, but you're probably going last. Mm-hmm. Or you can do the really lame thing, quote unquote, which is to go to bed early.
So you wake up.
I love that they called it that because nobody wants to do that as a rock star. Like
Again, it's this functional art that works really well with the mechanics of the game. So
mm-hmm.
I agree. Yeah, that's a great little addition to the after hours. And
sure,
if you go to bed early, then you get to wake up. You'll wake up before everybody. So that means you get to go to the studio before everybody else yep. does. You get to go hire some crew and so things like that. No, I think it's an excellent use of the theme to try and, you know, have this mechanic that you want, and you intertwine both.
I also think it was a good decision sticking on the limited space choice. Some places that are really valuable, like hiring a crew or certain gigs, will let multiple people go there.
Yeah.
But the payout or the cost is different. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of worker placements do that, but I mean, to have so many of those across the board was, I think, really valuable.
Yeah.
And it gets even more so in a 4-to-5 player game
mm-hmm.
to allow for those choices where you don't feel like you're boxed out of everything. So I think that was a good choice. It'll be really interesting playing worker placements going forward just because of that apiary perspective. But yeah.
Apiary, yeah. So there's not really turns. I mean, there's not rounds in that, is there though?
Yeah, you're just taking, like, someone starts.
It's continuous turns.
Sure.
Continuous
Whereas
action.
Whereas this has got, yeah, that end
so,
game.
And most worker placements do have turns, so that one's why that one's just, it's got a different feel, because
sure.
you have to balance at that part of not having turns where, you know, and a lot of worker placement, you know, your turn order is so much, and in a lot of them, there's a specific location that, like, determines turn order. Like, if you go here, you're going to be first, and then whoever
sure.
goes there is going to be second player.
Yep.
And so I kind of like this kind of additional twist to that idea, is that yes, there's a spot where if everybody goes to bed early, you know, you would just go in order that whoever went to bed first, but nobody's
right.
going to do that. Maybe in a higher player count, maybe two people might, just because you want to get there second. But in this, you know, you have, I think, 11 locations.
Yeah. I think 12 if you're playing in the 4-to-5 player game.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's an extra spot. Again, you have these 12 spots, and if you're playing with 5 players, then, you know, 5 of them will be taken, but each spot will be numbered on which, and that determines player order. So I think it's a really cool idea, and allowing you to have this race to get a first player. But now there's meaningful things attached to those going last, going first, going in the middle, probably, depending on what you want to do. Because you can't just go to bed early every time, even though you go
sure.
to first. You're missing out on very, very valuable actions.
Yes.
Very valuable actions that you cannot miss. So those are important. And so you need to decide when you're going to go and take that first player token or first player action and get in that lead for the next round. Or do you go ahead and go to a hangout spot and get some extra stuff. You know, those are important decisions. And I really like that kind of tension there of trying to decide, okay, what do I want to do right now? What do I need to do on the beginning of my next turn? So it's a nice little different kind of spin on player order and a worker placement.
I also like too that the hangout spots are randomized
mm-hmm.
for turn order value each time. There was a game where I had to have a specific hangout type. And if that had gotten stuck with being 11th or 12th, that would suck. But the fact
yeah.
that it can, you know, move around is really good. The other thing I think I really enjoy about what this game does from a game perspective is I was immediately intrigued by, you could get to 50 points and end the game early.
Uh-huh.
And almost immediately was like, that's what I want to do, because I know everyone's going to ramp up to get to the end of the ninth round. But if I can get there fast, then what does that look like? And what have I sacrificed along the way to get there? Now, I didn't quite make it. I crossed 50 on the last round that
last
I was
round.
Trying to do that. And I was like, dang it, I was so close.
So close.
But I still felt like it was a cool thing of, I could get out of this faster if I'm playing a certain way. And so there is multiple different strategies. It's interesting, right? Because at the bottom of the middle of the board where the night section is, that's where your big concert is that you can go play at. But obviously you can't play there until you've really ramped up. It feels like in the games that we've played that's your end goal, is trying to get there. And the way you get there throughout the game can be wildly different. But by your last round, you're hoping to be there to really give you that jump to get over the edge. But I do like that I have these different strategies, but for ease of use for new players, this is the thing we're trying to get to. And so it gives you a starting point, it gives you an end point, and then you get to decide how you get there along the way.
You want the big show.
Yeah.
And I think that can potentially constricting and limiting to players that want a little bit deeper of a game. A lot of worker placements, it's like there's like 17 paths to victory.
Yeah.
I don't know if I see that in this game. I think there are potentially multiple paths to the biggest show, but you definitely want to score those at some point in the game. I think it would be very important, and you'd be missing out on a lot if you didn't score. It's like 10 points. Now, I don't know, because, okay, it is unlimited. The last location is unlimited, so...
To get 10 points.
Yeah. So everybody can go there, even if, you know, all five players could go there if they really wanted to, because it is the big show. So, like, I think, like you're saying, like, the game wants you to kind of get to that point.
Sure.
I think there are multiple paths on how to get there, though. I think there's a lot more opportunities.
I would completely agree with the multiple paths. And I think you could, in theory, you could be really efficient and not ever make it to the big show. You could win. I think it's possible.
I think it's possible.
It's one of those things where you know the game and you're going to try and do it a different way.
Mm.
Most people are going to be drawn to get to the big show. I need to do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I think that's what most rock bands want to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't start in the garage and be like, oh, well, we'll be cool to just play over at TJ's for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, it's
like,
fine. I do love, so another thing that I really liked, and again, it's kind of that theme that you have, I mean, what is it, 6-ish different locations to go play during the evening, during the nighttime. So different bars or restaurants, and then there's also this kind of random gig thing that could be.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Playing at a millionaire's house or, you know, playing at, you know, a charity.
We had a
event
bar mitzvah one time.
A bar mitzvah, yeah. So you get these, yeah, I mean, you just get, there's a lot of opportunities. And we didn't play with all of them. There's always a variety. I think there's like 9 that you don't get to play with. So you can mix them in. And
sure.
It's a nice little, again, variety. There's a little bit of randomness. I really like that aspect. It's like, okay, well, where do I want to play? And then wherever you do play, they're all a slightly different. Sometimes they give you fame and other things. They give you chops or, you know, songs or whatever. Like they all kind of give you a little bit of different things.
We should probably talk about the player board because I feel like that would help things make a little bit more sense.
Yeah. So the player board it's a nice big, it looks like an amp. It has little amp dials that you'll turn legitimate. I'm fully serious here. It has amp dials that you actually crank like a real amplifier.
And they can crank up to 11.
Yeah, you can crank up to 11, not 10, which is always fantastic. Oh, just excellent work there. So then you also have a switch will show you crashing with candy, a sugar, your blood sugar being low or, you know, whatever you want to do. You ate too much candy, so.
You hate to see it.
Yeah. The player board has like the amp kind of speaker face, but you will cover that up with the character that you will choose in your game. And this big character literally slides right in and fits perfectly inside this board. So you'll have your dials at the top and then your character with his ability or her ability. And then, you know, what type of music, are they a drummer? Are they a vocalist? Are they a keyboardist? And then they have a special ability on there as well. So you get that, that all fits on this one board. It's nice. It's kind of square. It's all compact, which is really nice. And then on top of that, you also get all your cards and things, which you'll set off to the side. But I do like how all of that stuff, like it fits very nicely in that little thing. And you have so much information just right there as well. It's nice to have.
All right, so I'll ask you about this, and then you can tell me if there's anything else that you like. Candy. Candy adds a very interesting push-your-luck mechanic to this game.
Yeah.
Because everybody always wants more actions. That's always something that you want. So candy gives you that most of the time. but eventually it does add a push your luck element. And it's interesting, right? Because at first, taking candy is no big deal. Like, you just take some candy, get a little bump, and you're all good to go. And but as that craving increases, it becomes a lot riskier to continue taking candy.
Right.
Do you feel like it is implemented well?
I think candy is a very unique way of adding extra actions to the game. I don't know, as a fan of games and having the ability to take extra actions, I don't know if I like a random deck that has multiple things in it that just like won't give you the extra action.
Yeah, I agree. The whole sugar-free thing was kind of a disappointment.
I almost would rather there be just, and I mean, you could, this is a game that you could easily house rule, you know, take, this is something that you could do. I just would rather have the knowledge. There's already enough randomness with rolling the die that I don't know if I need the cards to also maybe not give me the action as well. I don't know how much I like that part. And if we're starting to get into things that are kind of bothersome, this would be it. There's a couple of, they like to add a lot of randomness to this, and that adds variety. But there's also a randomness specifically that I don't like that they've added in a couple key aspects of this game, which the candy is one of them. I like being able to spend the candy and then you roll the die. And then if obviously it's lower, the longer the game goes on, it's harder to do that. I like that. I just don't know if I like the cards to add extra randomness because candy's a little bit hard to get at times. You can take an action to buy it, which is great.
But then you're burning an action to get more actions later.
You're burning an action to get an extra action later. And then I'm like, if I spend my candy, I might not even get the action. So I'm like, well, that I wasted getting that candy in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if I like that. I'd rather spend it and then roll the die and maybe crash. I think you still get the action and all that. So, yeah, I don't know. And then the other part is there's an event deck.
Oh, you didn't like the event deck.
So there are parts of it where, again, it's a little extra randomness that I don't know if I like. I'm not as passionate about the event deck. I think it's important to mention that there is some randomness, and we didn't hit a lot of the negative. We did hit some positive ones. There's a couple negative when I looked through some of the ones that never came up in our games. There's some that can kind of hurt, and it's like, well, I can't go there. Like, let's say it locks you out of a location and you were waiting to build up for that location this turn. Well, now you're just screwed. So what if you went to bed early and then you flip the event deck for the next round and you can't go to the location you wanted to go to? I just don't like that. I don't like the idea of me building up to go do something in the day phase the next turn and then the event flips up and I can't go to the studio or I can't get a mixtape. And I'm like, that kind of sucks for, it's just, I think it's a little extra randomness that is not needed, or maybe make it not as harsh where it's cost more to do those things. I don't know. I just don't like saying, oh, you can't go to this part of the board. I mean, it's a worker placement game. So like, I've been saving up to go to that place of the board and you're telling me I just can't go there all of a sudden. I think that's kind of, I don't know. It's a little much in my opinion.
That's interesting. So I agree with you 100% on the candy. And again, I think we're both looking at that part of it from a game perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think for both on the theme side, they both make sense.
They do. Yeah.
And it really adds to what you're going through as a rock star, where there's things that are just way outside of your control that either you have some dud candy or you have a day where the studio's closed and there's just nothing you can do about it. I get it. I really wasn't bothered by the event deck. I kind of thought that was one more element to just kind of work with. And I kind of liked that it changed the game state a little bit. But I can see how if you're consistently getting upended by it, then yeah, that would be frustrating. So there's that. I don't know. It's one of those parts of the game, going back to the candy, where I wish it did a little bit more when you're flipping that card over. Like maybe instead of there being duds, it might say you're going to roll the die twice and take the worst number or something like that.
Yeah.
Uncertain, you know, like something like that. Or I don't know.
Then just saying straight up, you just did doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Like, it could just be a thing of choosing theme over game mechanics in that moment, but I also understand the frustration of it.
I think it's important to go in knowing there's a little bit of randomness.
Sure.
And I'm not a big fan of that kind of randomness that can really just screw you over. So I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think that the light gameplay that is here, I can accept it. I think that's sure. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just never felt like the event deck screwed me. If that makes sense.
I don't think we ever had the cards. There are some.
Okay.
That I think you could kind of get wrecked in a way, potentially by you're like you flipped it, you know, and it's again situational, but I would feel bad for somebody that went to bed early trying to get to that studio A or get this thing. Right. And then it's like, oh, you can't go here.
That makes sense.
I would feel bad. And I would be frustrated if it happened to me. And I'm like, why can't it just cost more? Or like, because I do know the deck does that where it just says straight up, you can't go here.
Yeah.
We had
one game where all the hangouts closed on the last round.
Right.
And if you needed to finish out a collection to get like, points, that would be
exactly.
terrible.
What if you waited to the last round to be like, hey, I got the first player. I know I'm going to get that hideout. And then boom. Or hangout, hideout. You're hiding out at the hangout. It's just, I'm seeing how that could potentially be a problem. That would be very frustrating as a player. Incredibly frustrating. Yeah, I don't know. You know? I'm not sure how to take that. It's definitely something to consider because that would be very frustrating.
I get it. All right. Anything else that you have qualms with?
A very light issue is the way everything is stored. It is a little clunky.
Oh, here we go.
There's no like insert or anything to like, you kind of have to puzzle it a little bit to get it all in there. Once the dials are on, it does. I mean, it fits in the box pretty tight once you have everything built. So I'm not a big fan of not having anything in there to at least protect everything or have some type of way that like, hey, it goes in this way. I am a little bit more of a sucker for nice inserts. The box is a normal size. I think I'd have to make sure. I think it's like the Ticket to Ride box. I'm pretty sure. I now have to check. It's similar and they fit a lot in the box and the component quality is amazing. I just didn't like how when you opened it, like everything's kind of like in little paper wrappings and then you had to peel the plastic off the back of the acrylics. Whatever. Again, this is just like the minor things. It's just annoying. I just don't like doing that. And then there was no like storage solution other than you need to go get some of your own bags and put all the cards in. I'd rather you just give me card size bags for the cards that you're giving me personally. I know other people have, you know, a drawer of bags. I do have some, but not, I don't have 12 of the different decks. Anyway, if you had, I'm just complaining, but it would have been nice to have some bags that I'll pay $5 or $3, whatever, 10 cents. I don't care for some extra bags that, you know, you are giving me the ability to organize it the way I want. But
so that's really interesting. So I'm going to ask this question thinking about our conversation the other day when we were discussing this topic. So I remember you saying you were frustrated that everything was kind of quote unquote loose and could just bang around.
Yeah.
If they had given you enough bags, but no insert, would that be sufficient?
Yeah, that would be fine. I would get over it.
Okay. I'm just curious. I will devil's advocate slightly. I mean, I think I agree with you that I would prefer an insert, but I also appreciate the desire to make the price point as reasonable as possible because you're trying to make it as accessible to as many people as possible.
That's fine. Yeah, no, that's fine. The insert thing it's more of just having no storage solution at all. If you're not going to give me a nice insert, at least throw a couple extra bags in there for me. That would be fine. But
I get it.
What they need to do is they need to talk to the people that send 20 extra bags with their game that you throw away all the bags. And then they need to talk to Devere and work out a connection to balance it out. That way we have the perfect amount of bags for every single game we open.
There you go. Collaboration.
There you go. Collaboration. Solved.
I don't know that I have a whole lot to critique. I think that this is a fun game. I enjoyed the journey. It was interesting because we got done playing it and I wondered, like, would I want to keep coming back to this? And it wasn't until the next time we opened it up that I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm ready to like jump back into it now.
Yeah.
Even like today when I was typing up the notes for this, I was like, oh man, I'm ready to play again. So
yeah,
it does have that draw, which is cool. But I haven't played it 25 times, so I don't know if at the end of 25 times, I'm gonna be like, well, we're kind of doing the same thing here.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it. And I like that. I have one small critique that I am going to bring up about the artwork. This is a personal problem.
Oh, yes.
I've never had this problem before, so I feel like I have to mention it. This started at Gen Con when it was every, like, this artwork advertisement was everywhere. I cannot stand this dude's butt. Like, and it is just front and center on this box because the shot is him, like, you're behind him facing out to the crowd. It drives me nuts. Like, I love all the artwork that Jennifer Guiner did in this. I was looking at her Instagram page. She's a fantastic artist, so I don't want to take anything away from that. But this dude's butt drives me nuts. And that's the only part of this game that I really have a huge issue with.
There you go. Yeah.
I had to get that off my chest.
I know you did. I know you did. Yeah, no, it's okay. It's fine. No, I don't care about that. I do think, I guess one little art thing is, and in the rulebook, there's a little like cliff note on which each hangout spot gives you potentially.
Yeah.
I would have liked that to be on the board.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a nice little ad, but it's not. Maybe there just wasn't a space that they wanted to print. I don't know. It's okay. You can just look at the rulebook. It's not a big deal. It would have been nice to have a little reference thing on there or like on the back of the player aid or something. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you could print one, so it's not a big deal.
Sure. All right. With that said, Ian, let's kind of go through a few things pretty quick and then we'll wrap it up. Player count. Do you have a preference?
I think in worker placements, I do like a little bit tighter of a board. So I think 3 or 5 would probably be good numbers because the 3 is on the small board. So it's going to be the tightest and stressful. And then 5 will be the stressful on the other side. So I think 3 or 5.
Sure. I think that's good. I really liked this at 3. You had that tightness, but also it could clip really quick. And there was, you know, once you understood how to play, it really flowed. So I really like this at 3 a lot. There is a 2-player option where you add in, it's not a bot. I forget what they call it, but essentially there's a AI player that takes up certain spots each round. And I did like that idea. I like that better than just playing a bot who randomly chooses stuff. You can at least kind of anticipate what that quote unquote third player is going for. So I was fine with that.
Yeah.
But then other things to note would be that, what do you think about player interaction? I mean, outside of the obvious of people taking your spots, it's kind of you're doing your own thing.
Yeah. You're not affecting anybody's gameplay.
Right.
So, like, it just depends. I don't think you're affecting anybody's gameplay, so the interaction is kind of low. Like, you're just not have, but it's, you are being hindered by what other players are wanting to do. So I think there's that part. I think there's a good amount of interaction there in that with that and trying to predict what maybe somebody will do on their turn. You're okay. Well, if I go here this right now, I don't think anybody's going to go there to that place next round. You know, you're kind of a little bit kind of predicting what maybe other people might go for.
Yeah.
So there, you know, there's That's interaction. True. There's not zero, but yeah, it's going to be limited. And I think it fits for what the game wants to be.
Yep. I would agree. All right. With that said, grading and final thoughts.
You want me to go first?
It's interesting. I can't tell which one of us is going to be higher. I know we try to like anticipate and pick that person to go last, but I can't tell on this one. So sure, you go first.
Okay. Hold on one second. Let me see here.
No, oh, he has to reflect.
Okay. So this game wants to be a light. I think it wants to be more of a lighter weight, you know, family-esque game. I know you don't like that term. We talked about this prior to the podcast, but I say family because if you have a family that has, you know, either teens or adults, this would work good, where there is some innuendo and things that could be in, you know, it's not necessarily the most appropriate for kids. So not all families, but a family light game. I think this game fits that very well. The 2 to 5 player count, the time limit. We did discuss our games did take a little bit longer. We were learning. I think if everybody knew what they were doing, it would fit into the kind of under 2 hour time block.
Oh, for sure.
So there is that part as well. So I think it fits what it wants to be incredibly well. I think the theme fits and works well. And I felt like I was trying to be a musician. I think that was really cool. Like, you have a lot of things that you're trying to do, and they're kind of simple and easy to achieve, in my opinion. Like, it's not overly complex in the way you don't have to like go here, go here, go here, go here. It's like, this thing gives you points. This thing gives you points. This thing allows you to get more points, that type of situation. And I think all of that, it fits really well in this game, and it does what it wants to do, and it completes that goal for me. And I think overall as a game, I'm going to give this game a 7.5. I think it does everything that it wants to do really well. And I enjoyed playing it. I had fun playing it. And does it have issues? Yes. It's again, it's not that like super heavy game. I think it fits for what it wants to be, which is kind of a slider work replacement. And I really liked it. I really enjoyed, I thought it was fun. And I there's a lot of variety. I only got to play a couple of the characters, so there's more to be played, and there's variety in the box enough to add there. And as far as the candy and all that, I don't know how I feel down the road. Maybe I'll just take out the sugar-free candy, because we want to have the hard candy only. But
it's very important.
We'll see. We'll see what I'll do in the future. But I think there's a lot of potential here. I think you can have a lot of fun with this game. I think you could sit down with people that are not really into a whole bunch of games, but they're like, hey, you want to become a rock star? Let's go. You know? So.
Well, I can't remember the last time that we shared a score.
Oh, boy.
But I also will give this a 7.5 in the context of, I understand that this is a lighter game, and I mean, I don't want to make it out to be like it's super easy.
Oh, no.
There's definitely choices and things that you want to connect and build that engine and that sort of thing. So I don't want to come across any kind of way like that. But it like I said before, it does sit in that medium light range for me. And I mean, if it didn't have the more adult themes in it, I would agree with Ian that it is family weight, that you could sit down with anybody and really play it, especially like 10 and up if the themes weren't in there, and you can take those out. So maybe that's what you do.
You can. Yeah. There's specific cards you can, I think it has a symbol that you can take out.
Right.
And it does say 14 plus. So,
yep. So I knew I wanted to try this game. I'm not a heavy musician, so I didn't need to feel like a rock star, but it was still cool to take that journey anyways. I'm surrounded by a lot of musicians, being in Nashville, of course. So to have something like that is pretty cool. And of course, you know, Ian and Anna are really into music, so it's cool to let them try that out. So I think 7.5 fits really well. I like it. I enjoyed it. I look forward to getting it back to the table, and I would recommend it.
Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, being a musician, it makes it fun. And I would say Julia actually, she said she really enjoyed the game. And so I think that's an important thing, because I use that as a metric. she likes strong theme, and she doesn't like overly complex, but she likes to have decisions as well. So I her giving it the thumbs up as well, I think fares well for what really the target audience. And I think that that's an important thing to note. It's like, this is, I feel like she's probably more of the targeted audience, more than like a strict, like pure heavy gamer. But I think it works well for both. I think everybody at the table had fun, and that's what you want. That's why we play games.
For sure. That's why we play games. Cool. Well, hey, thank you to all of you for taking the time to listen, especially if you've made it this far, or if you, you know, got 3 minutes in and said, nah. I mean, thank you for trying us out either way. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Alexi Chistelin for the How to Play background music, and to Anna Snyder who made the music. Join us next week as we head back over to the Two Top Table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Become a rock star. Rock!